It's a bear.
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 It's a bear in a cage. In the cage is a bear. What's he doing in there? Locked inside, no room to play on this lovely summer day. It's a bear.
It's a bear.
It's a bear. Why do they have him locked inside?
It's a bear.
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 It's a bear in a cage.
The official Midsommar Bear in a Cage. Now available on shop.a24films.com. Not compatible with other games, including Skin the Fool from A24.
So we're just going to ignore the bear then?
It's a bear.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Stuff We've Seen. This is Jim, and now, here he is, upgrading the Constitution one executive action at a time, Teal. How's it going, buddy?
The Constitution was written for executive action. It's all about unitary executive theory. It's built...
I think it's just the idea that, you know, sometimes, you know, it's an old document and a lot has changed. So if you don't like what's in there, just executive action it away.
Just do whatever you please.
Unless, of course, you're a Democratic president, then you're in for a heap of trouble if you try to do something by executive action.
Oh, what a world.
What a world. All my wickedness.
What a strange world we've entered into.
It is a strange time, filled with weirdness, conspiracy theories abound, and movies. Hey, I haven't been this excited talking about movies on a show in a while.
Really? We're talking about Spider-Man Far From Home today?
Oh, see, now you're going to start me getting angry. All right. I thought maybe that might come up. I'm going to start on an angry note. Look, there's a lot of movies out there. And I have seen some bad. Shush. I have seen some bad ones in my time. I mean, I'm talking really bad movies and bad superhero movies. But there are a few times that I have felt as nauseated and angry at a movie, and especially a superhero one, as I was seeing Spider-Man Far From Home, which I will go on record as saying it is worse than Batman and Robin.
Is it? So it's definitely worse than Ant-Man and Wasp.
It is definitely worse. It is the worst Marvel movie I have ever seen.
Have you ever seen the TV show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I watched several episodes of the first season, and maybe did I even finish watching the first season? I don't know. It was not a very good show.
Was the show better than this movie, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's the only reason I was asking. So this is the worst Marvel endeavor
yet. I liked the last Spider-Man, the Homecoming.
I did, too. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. It was a little silly.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't mind. It was kind of Spider-Man's a teenager, right? And it sort of was the more kid-oriented of the Marvel movies.
This movie was so bad. I hated it.
So,
I mean,
give me a couple of details about what's so wrong with it.
Well, first of all, they borrow heavily from ghosts of Marvel past in a way that not even the other retreads have dared.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it borrows from ones that I didn't like. I mean, borrowed from Iron Man 3, some of the concepts there.
Okay.
The whole villain aspect of this movie, that whole thing, it was so bad. I haven't read anything on this, by the way, and I don't read the comics. I knew exactly what was up in this movie from the get-go. It was very obvious. And if it's obvious to me, someone's viewing, then why is it not obvious to everybody in the movie?
Right. That's so frustrating.
That's a problem because the movie people should be at least as smart as an audience
member.
Okay,
so this went wrong at the script level.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was not, I mean, you know, look, I don't have a problem with Tom Holland, the kid who plays Spider-Man or any of that.
Right.
It also, you know, one of my least favorite parts of these Marvel movies are the jokey jokes that get kind of worse and worse. This movie is just filled with yucks. It's a yuck fest.
Weren't we just talking last week about those Arnold Schwarzenegger jokes?
Yes,
and how they kind of break the movie. This is a similar kind of thing, right?
The entire movie is broken,
right?
I mean, they go away. The whole plot is convoluted, and I don't really want to get into it because we have so much great stuff to talk about. But
I think you've said enough. Yeah. Okay.
No. I want to tell. No. Now I'm an uncaged
now
beast.
Now that I've opened this.
Well,
Pandora's
there's this whole
box.
Thing about. The Marvel movies with like ridiculous amounts of destruction that would cost billions of dollars and lives would be
right.
Like even if the death toll is low, the people injured, the casualties would be high.
And they tried to address that in one of the movies.
Yeah. The Age of Ultron.
Yes.
Which by the way is another movie that I hated of the Marvel films. And they take that aspect. It's the idea of Tony Stark's technology backfiring in a sense. And so like they recycle that aspect and there's just things, like, maybe you should see it just so your mouth will drop because when the destruction happens, other than the main players in the movie who keep running around the action, you don't see a single person on the streets.
Right, yeah.
You see empty cars, you see buildings, but because they don't want to show people getting hurt or killed, they just don't show anybody.
That is bizarre.
It is the weirdest, it's the weirdest movie, now, and I really have to say I don't think I liked the frame of this film.
Okay, did Spider-Man have like a Tony Stark Spider-Man suit?
Yeah, that's another thing too.
And,
I really
hate
the Stark.
I hate that.
But you're gonna if you hate the Stark suit, you're gonna really hate the Stark glasses.
Oh man! Because
I didn't know any of this, by the way. And of course, I know you're a big Gyllenhaal fan.
Yes,
but you're gonna be left a little disappointed. I think.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
Okay.
Isn't there a grade lower than F? Because it's lower than F.
I may end up seeing it. My daughter wants to see it because, you know, Tom Holland.
You know what? I didn't like Suicide Squad. It was a movie I really hated.
Did anyone like Suicide Squad?
I think there are people out there. Okay. I wish we should have Michael McQuilkin back on because he actually gave it a positive review on Facebook. And it was his review that made me go and see Suicide Squad. And I thought it was an abomination. However... Yeah. I'm really wrestling with the fact that I think I liked Suicide Squad more than Spider-Man Homecoming. Do you know what movie I didn't like more than Spider-Man Homecoming?
What?
Was Son of the Pink Panther with Roberto Benigni. That movie was the most detestable film I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
This wasn't as bad because I didn't walk out of the movie and my youngest was with me and he enjoyed the Spider-Man, but it was close.
Right,
but to being Son of Pink Panther bad.
were the action scenes at least sort of coherent?
No. It was on the screen happening and I could give a crap.
Oh man.
It was boring and it's like Spider-Man whatever. Like there's been just too many
But was your kid into the action at all?
I guess. I mean, you know, he's a kid. This is why these movies do well. But it's like a lot of flash and stuff going on the screen. My oldest, who's away at camp, the reason we went while he's gone is that he had no desire to see it. Like he's like, catch it on cable.
Well, that's kind of how I feel about Marvel in general.
It is going to be now. And the best part is I'm not going to get the streaming service, so I won't have to catch it on cable.
Let's move on.
I'm hoping that we have to cut, and I'll just cut this all out. But I will keep it. I will keep it somewhere where I can listen to it for my own amusement someday. But
let's move on and talk about an actual summer movie.
Yeah. After you've derailed us, what I was going to say is that what I like is give me a movie at any time of the year, good or bad, that is worth discussing.
yeah,
worth talking about, worth kind of dissecting a
bit more. Worth thinking about.
Worth thinking about and really wrestling with a lot of themes and really wondering, like, hey, you know, what is this director up to? Why did he – how the decisions he makes or she makes and – you know, you get one of these, and we got actually two, in my opinion. And we'll see how far we get if we can tackle them both. But the first, it's in theaters now. And so I think that regardless of what you might, you know, walk away liking or not liking this film, it's a theater experience.
Yes.
And we made our efforts to get there separately.
I made a big effort.
You went, what, 45 minutes away,
yeah,
right?
Actually, an hour, really. Yeah.
Wow. So he went an hour.
I drove an hour.
Luckily,
yeah.
My theater was up the street, so I didn't have to make the journey this time, and though a lot of these films I do. And we're talking about director Ari Aster's Midsommar. And it's a film where the first film that Ari made was Hereditary, and we talked about it early on in our podcast episodes, and we were not big fans of it.
Yeah, I really, well, I feel like I need to qualify that somehow is that it's not part of the reason I didn't like the film is because parts of it were so good.
I actually understand what you're saying.
Yeah, that it was so good that it invites more criticism in a way. And so when it stumbles, it's even more disappointing because it does something really great and then kind of shoots itself in the foot. And I felt like that movie shot itself in the foot over and over again, and it could have been something really great.
I'm pretty much in agreement. I think we said it before. I enjoyed the movie more than you did, yeah. But maybe not that much more. And it's not a film that I really cared to revisit.
I don't need to watch it again.
I think it's important before we really get into this thing,
yeah,
that this episode is, there's no way to really talk about a film like Midsommar without getting into the content, and it will be a spoiler filled episode. And so if you haven't seen it and it's something you wanted to be surprised at when you watch it, our suggestion is maybe you don't listen to this episode until you've seen Midsommar.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that the film, I think the less you know about it, the better. I mean, you kind of, if you know the basic concept, great, or you've seen the trailer or something. But I think it has some surprises in it that are not necessarily plot twist kind of things, but... I don't think you want to listen to our show before you watch it. We're going to spoil everything.
Yeah, you enjoyed the first rant there about Spider-Man, but now you can leave.
But yeah, yep.
And come back.
Come back later. Tune in later. And
the thing is, this film's gotten a wide enough release that I would say that you have a shot at going out to the theater and seeing it. So you should.
Yeah, I actually don't know how many screens it's on, but it's not doing great.
No, and so this, again, you know, it's funny. We want to talk about it. We have a lot of things we want to talk about, but the order in which we talk about these films don't necessarily come out the way I imagine. And one of the things is that I really want to get this out before we start getting into it. I loved this movie. I loved it in every way imaginable. I think it was even greater just because I was thinking I was going to hate it because I really wasn't a fan of Hereditary.
Right.
And I thought that it was going to be more of the same from this guy. I really wasn't sold that he had I thought this guy had potential as a director, that
right.
He could do some interesting things, but that he might have thought that he was better than he really was and that he had a kind of ego or something.
Right.
So I was just, I honestly was floored by this movie because the things that I liked about Hereditary, he improved upon those. And
yes.
The things that I thought were misses in Hereditary, he like fixed those mistakes and
totally
and
grew,
so many ways.
Yeah, totally grew up in this movie somehow. Got over his sort of bad instincts or those moments where I'm talking about shooting itself in the foot. He doesn't do that this time. He's much more restrained and I think much more...
Confident,
and yes, the vision is much more solid. In Hereditary, it felt a little bit like he was sort of just throwing some things at the wall, whereas this felt like every single detail was intentional and well thought out. And, you know, maybe not that it was unintentional and hereditary. It just the vision didn't add up. And here it does.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of similarities in tone and in sort of the themes and some of the ideas of symbolism, et cetera. Yeah. And yet in the first film, again, if I watched it back again, I guess you'd see maybe more of those in the background, et cetera. There were like hints and clues. But the main story of the conclusion of the film, that felt like it happened at the end of Hereditary, but it wasn't earned.
Exactly.
Because he was hiding. He wanted to surprise the audience with this ending, so he didn't want to reveal too much about what the whole story was about.
Right.
But it was not revealed early enough to merit the end. Whereas Midsommar is a film that this guy recognized that it's a weird genre movie that he was involved in. It's sort of this the idea of the folk pagan cult, and you know, it's a genre that doesn't have that many movies, but there are some. And the most famous of all is this film called The Wicker Man by a director, Robin Hardy. And if you know that movie, and if you're a fan of that film, you just kind of know, especially from any of the, you know, marketing materials for this, that it wasn't going to be just a fun festival film. This was the idea that there was going to be some bad things perhaps happening in the movie. So he makes a really wise decision here. He says, people who come to this movie, chances are they're not going to go in not expecting this. They're going to expect something.
Right.
So this film isn't going to just try to like dance around that and that you're supposed to be shocked by like some surprise ending. That it's about the journey here.
Exactly.
And I'm actually going to give you all sorts of hints and clues throughout the film to enhance the experience. And it's okay. It's not supposed to be that shocking to us in the audience.
Right.
The idea is, does the pacing of the film work enough that when the character's on screen, does it unfold the right way so that as they're kind of experiencing and learning? Like, is it one of those things where sometimes you see these movies where you're like, why doesn't the character figure this out by now?
Right.
Or the character figures it out the right amount of time. And I felt that in this case, that part of the pacing of the movie was spot on.
It was spot on. Yeah, I mean, I could quibble a tiny bit.
Let's save the quibbles, because I think we should quibble, but let's put all the good stuff in, and then let's, because I do want to analyze and talk about some of the things where I think there was, you know, that I kind of just want to talk it out with you, but let's put the quibbles for a second.
Yeah, I'll keep the quibbles, because, okay, so I want to talk a little bit about my experience of seeing this movie, which was, I was the only person in the theater.
Really? Nobody else?
Nobody else.
This happens to you a lot. I think it maybe has happened to me like six times in my life.
It's happened to me so many times in my life. So I was the only person in the theater. And after the first, I don't know, maybe 7 minutes of this movie, it's because of her performance in the scene. We're giving everything away, so it doesn't matter if I just talk about it. So
Spoiler alert, the whole episode is spoilers.
Yeah.
So we can talk about it.
So I'm just going to talk about it. I'm going to stop saying spoiler alert. And it's the scene right after she finds out about the murder-suicide of her family. And she's on the couch with her head on her boyfriend's name is Christian on his lap. And she's wailing. And I give this all to the, well, not just to Florence Pugh, but also to the director, because it's this amazing shot slowly moving in and she's just breaking down, totally melting down. And then the shot sort of moves all the way in and out the window and it's snowing outside. And,
By the way, he did similar things in Hereditary that in my mind, they didn't work. They do.
And here they do. Amazing. And here they do. And this one worked so well that I was almost like, I don't know if I can handle watching the rest of this movie if it's going to be this emotionally intense.
Here it is. This to me, and I don't know if I feel like this is a horror movie, though I know people, I'm fine with it being in that genre, but this is my favorite type of a horror film. Unsettling and creepy.
Yes.
And I felt completely unsettled in the movie. And of course, even though, you know, part of me is like, what is up with this guy in creating these severe moments of insane pain, emotional and physical, with family? You know, what happens to her family is so distraught. But not only does it fit into the plot, what it does to the audience, it completely unsettles you.
Yes.
I am now unsettled, and it's like for the first part of the film, I can't shake what's just happened, and that puts me in a state as an audience member that's a cool place to be, that a filmmaker puts me there.
Exactly. So 5 minutes in, I'm already like emotionally raw, right? Which is what the character is, right? She's in this very vulnerable place walking into this commune.
Yeah. And also, you know what's another cool thing? Again, this is where I'm like, this guy... We're in the hands of maybe a budding master. I don't know. Is that you know that this relationship is rocky, and you've been verbally yes. told that through some conversations where you have the boyfriend and his pals.
And his pals are saying, you've been wanting to get out of this relationship for a year.
But see, what happens is there's a lot of times these movies where she ends up going on the trip with them and you don't buy it. You're like, right. Okay. But here... You know damn well that you're just about to break up with somebody, and then they have this tragedy happen to them.
Yes.
There's no way you're breaking up with them. You can't break up with them at this point. They need you in a way, and so you're already making a sacrifice.
Yes.
But he wants to get away from her still, so he is going to go on this trip to Sweden, and then she finds out about it.
He invites her, of course.
Right. And he invites her thinking she's not going to go. And then he has to tell his friends to kind of play along. And here's another Matt. This is where, again, this guy's a master. And there is comedy in this film. And
yes.
It was a funny moment. And I was laughing several times in this movie. It is a brilliant scene where she is thinking about, you know, whether she's going to go or not go. And she's just an emotional wreck because
yes.
somebody mentioned something about her family. She starts crying and crying. And then they do this. He does this masterful jump cut.
Yes. Into the airplane.
To the exact agent where she's now crying. But she's in an airplane bathroom. And the funny part is, you know, that whatever's transpired between that one emotional outburst
yes.
and this one, she's now on the trip with them. It is a genius,
genius
move.
Yeah.
And as soon as that, I'm like, this movie is grooving. I'm digging it. And then there's that shot. And it's like, you know what? Unless you're so confident that you're going all the way with this movie. And it was kind of like how Mandy, there was a lot of confidence going
right.
on in that
yes,
film.
Yes.
Is there's that shot where they're getting ready to go in the compound and it's just upside down.
Oh, as they're driving.
And yeah. And it's like
well, first,
such a brilliant thing.
The camera is behind the car. Sort of following from maybe a helicopter view, and it moves forward over the car and tilts down until the car is upside down. And then it cuts to a shot of like the point of view of the car going forward, but it's also upside down.
It's so great.
But the movement is amazing, and it's just telling us, okay, we're going into an upside down world now. It's, you know, Alice has just fallen into the rabbit hole.
And it's, you know, what's so great is that, you know, you can't fill a movie with scenes and shots like that. You have to pick and choose
yeah.
those moments, and that was a perfect moment.
Well, because it's incredibly meaningful. It tells a story with an image.
And I think that's where I thought, you know, again, see, you as you know, I'm not a fan, usually, of digital cinematography. And I really didn't even like the cinematography that much in Hereditary.
Yeah.
Yet it's the same cinematographer, Pawel Porgaczewski. And it's the same aspect ratio. It's like a 2-to-1 ratio.
Yeah.
But everything is different. It's almost like, again, he's a fairly new cinematographer.
Yeah.
And the two have learned from each other. And every decision works
okay,
for me
so
from
this,
a visual standpoint.
This almost to the point, and I said this before, but when I walked out of this movie, I wanted to see it again for many reasons. But one of them is that I was almost distracted at times by how well directed it was. Because I've long thought, okay, that one of the most difficult things to film is people in a field, because you don't have any vertical lines. You don't have things to shape your composition around. And so basically this movie is about a group of people in a field. There are some buildings that are used, really intently to use for certain meanings at times, but basically the whole movie is people in a field in Sweden. And so what needs to happen in order for the story to be told is not just filming people saying their dialogue, but it has to be about the movement of it too. And that's what this film does so brilliantly, is the blocking and the camera movement combined with the body language of the actors.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, you know, look, I always make the argument, and I'd say that the argument on this one, too, look, the film didn't have to be 2 hours and 20 minutes. It could have easily been 2 hours.
Yeah.
But that being said, even though it's a slow-paced sort of movie, because, again, it's sort of languid that they are spending all this time outside in the midnight sun, I wasn't even remotely bored in this movie even 1 second.
No.
It was always interesting, and again, as you just said, you have to be able to, it's more than dialogue, you have to be able to film something so that it's always interesting.
Yes, and that it's always telling a story, and so much of that in this movie is about where people are standing, how they're standing, who they're moving towards within the frame.
You know, I'm glad, you just said something, and again, this is going to be tough because you didn't see this movie, and it's not going to spoil it for you, but this is where, when I look at directors and how they handle it,
Yeah. What
you just said is something that can be so tricky, because I watched later on, at sort of like your mention, I saw a film which was handled not very well, and it was kind of drove me nuts.
Yeah.
And it was just like this movie called The Invitation. And
right.
It has this concept of a dinner party, and, you know, by the end, things may not go really well. And the idea is you have to build up tension, and you have to have ways to tell the story, but you have to have it told between characters.
Yes.
Where other people aren't hearing the conversations. So they desperately, the film director tries to get, and the script, they try to get these characters into these other rooms. It feels very forced. It seems ridiculous. And it feels like, oh, here's a scene where the two characters are off to A, fill some time because
right.
they want to get to the big conclusion. And it's not really moving the story. And it just feels awkward, like I don't buy it. And that is the trick.
And it's, I think, very hard. Yeah.
And so in this film, it's just fluid. It just feels right that these conversations are happening and that, you know, a lot of times, there's no secret here. It's not just a movie about a sort of sensational cult where maybe some bad things happen and something that characters. The whole film is about what it is to be indoctrinated into a cult and what that entire experience is.
And that was the only surprise. I basically knew how the movie was going to end, except I knew it was not going to end well for most of them.
You knew it wasn't going to end well, but you didn't know where was he going to take us exactly?
I didn't know where he was going to take us exactly. I knew that there was probably going to be some big death ritual at the end. I thought for a while that maybe she was the target of that. It doesn't make sense for her to be the target of it, but he made the right choice there, even though it's... different than, say, The Wicker Man, where he's the target, where the main character is the target. And I guess she is her own kind of target, but the last shot, her smiling, I think sort of the point you're trying to make is that the length of the film lulls the audience into this alternate reality in the same way it does to her.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they cover, like, again, I have some issues with the script, but it covers a lot of the bases in that when you're seeing people that are on this voyage, right, they think they're going to a celebration of a particular culture.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that there's a commune or something. And what they don't realize is that they are sort of unwilling. They think they're willing participants, but they're not. And,
no, they're
you know,
not at all.
And that what they don't realize is that they've been pre-selected, and that based on the numbers game at the end, that potentially all of the outsiders are up for elimination.
Yes. Yep. They are all.
And I would say that is including Danny, who is Florence Pugh. I think that depending on how these, because what they couldn't control is how these people would interact. And
exactly.
as you see in the film, I think not everybody acts that way. There's two people that aren't willing participants.
Yes. She's a willing participant.
And she becomes a willing participant. And she's worked. That's the best. She's worked. There's a handler.
Yes.
Pele is the handler.
Pele is
and
the
if
handler.
You know anything about these cults.
Yeah, right from the very beginning, he, you know, that scene we were just talking about.
Yes. Now I'm going to ask you a question because it's not in the film, all right? And I think it's purposely not in the film because you have to, you know, leave it to your own devices. And I think that the director kind of leaves enough And I had to do some after movie research because I had this theory and I wanted to see if anybody else had the theory. This is my own personal belief, and there's nothing in the film that directly tells this, okay? So I want to just say that with a grain of salt. There's nothing that, you know, you can't go back and examine things. My personal belief is that Pele, because of things they said at the end of the film about how he did a great job, I think he killed her parents and her sister. I think it was a setup murder-suicide, and that she was his target because they were obviously a friend group, and that he knew that they were having relationship trouble, and that that was the emotional thing that she needed to become very alone and separated and isolated and needed because he had his designs on her to be the May Queen.
Well, he also, you know, when he's trying to empathize with her at the beginning, he says, "When I was young, my parents died in a fire."
Yeah, and that was
They did. They died in the cult fire, and you.
But see, here's the thing, though. That's the thing that's thrown a lot of people off, because this celebration and the ending. And Ari Aster has been on. He was on a Reddit thing where the end part of that celebration is what happens every 90 years. So by that effect, that's been throwing people off because he says that story. And here's my interpretation. He knows where that thing's going to end is the fire. Well, he's handling her.
Yes. So, he's handling her right from
the beginning. I don't know if he may know his answer. Like, he know people die that way, but I don't know if his parents really did.
Yeah.
I think that there is. I mean, again, if you think about it, these people they're not truthful. They're lying to them the whole time.
Yeah. And he's a really amazing character because he does suck in the audience, too. He's very.
Well, he's never sinister.
What? He's never sinister. He's charming. He's humble. He really tries to negotiate with people. He's helpful. He's an amazing character.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. So this brings in another level, which I also thought this film worked really well at. And it's just, it's a subtext. But we are now living in a world right here in America where a good part of the population, and even what it doesn't matter what part of the population is, people are now willing to believe
all sorts of
whatever they
stuff.
Want and whatever they want to believe, if it just furthers their belief system. The certainty of belief principle is what it is called.
Yes.
And what this film is an amazing demonstration is how, what a cult basically is, right? It's a certainty of belief principles. These people really believe in all the things they're doing, these rituals, they're in a cult. This is their beliefs.
Yeah.
And this film never betrays their sort of code. And that's why these people are all very friendly, because they really don't see themselves as violent.
No.
They don't see anything wrong. They are so into their convictions that the sacrifices that these outsiders are making, I think that they justify it because at least one or two of them are going to also be sacrificed.
Exactly.
And then they have, and this is what I thought was so great in the middle, even though it was very disturbing, is you have the elders.
Yes, the elders' suicide scene.
And they set it up with enough information, and it is based on some crazy old rituals, that you get enough information so you're now, as an audience member, starting to prepare yourself, even though you're dreading. And I like that it's not just like, we're going to give you a shock surprise. We are going to give you enough information as an audience that you should start preparing
yourself. And then the film does a very good job of aligning the audience with what our characters are going through.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I love, is that they are feeling the pain, and there's that whole idea of like there's a hive mentality going on.
Well, but also the characters, there's the British guy's character name I can't remember, but he like freaks out. Fuck this. I'm out of here. This is crazy. Like in that moment. And so they have all these different reactions to these events, and that continues throughout. Everybody is sort of reacting to them differently.
So here's a couple of things. So what is your thoughts? Do you feel that like the parents and that murder-suicide was just, it happened and that, or do you think that the Pele was involved?
I think Pele was involved.
Okay.
Where,
I mean, again, it didn't give any direct evidence.
No. There's no direct evidence. It's really just, and I mean, maybe it doesn't really matter if he was, but he was definitely had, he was definitely working her from the very beginning. It was not just a casual, it was not just a coincidence in my mind.
Yeah. And that's why, again, I think that the script, you know, in poor scripts, you can say, well, I don't understand. She shouldn't have probably been there in the first place. And you could start to really rip it apart. Now, right. Here's the thing that is inescapable for me, but I love the movie so much that I'm willing to just, you know, kind of forgive it. But yeah. It still stick in my mind is there's so many of them that go over.
Yeah.
Somebody's got a family member, right, that's going to wonder what happened to them. And as, you know, my wife said, the one guy, he's like on the computer and he's trying to send stuff. There should be stuff and evidence in the cloud. And, you know, you start to think about what happens after the fact.
Yeah. And the thing is, 90 years ago, it would have been much easier for them to get away with.
Yeah, I would think so. Yes. And, you know, I kind of thought it'd be a funny tie-in with Wicker Man in that in the Wicker Man, right, the idea is that there's a missing girl that he goes right. to try to find. And it would be kind of funny that, you know, the sequel is now it's like Wicker Man tie-in where an investigator is going to find out what happened to all these kids.
Yeah, no. Once you get to the end and you have those thoughts, it's kind of, that is a valid critique of the movie, I think, is.
Yeah, I mean, that was my biggie, right? That was that one, and just the fact that Pele said that whole thing about the fire, and that it makes people go, "Well, wait a minute,
right?
Oh, I wonder if when he was little, he did this to his parents, and then he became really part of the cult,
right?
And I'm like, but wait a minute, this is only a 90-year ceremony, so anything that could even add to confusion of the audience, I always think is not a good thing.
Well, especially when in a film like this where the religion they've created is so complete and so thoroughly imagined and so detailed that you don't want anything kind of out of place or confusing the audience.
Yeah. Those were really my gripes, honestly. I didn't really have anything. So I'm kind of curious what other gripes you had so we can discuss.
Okay. And mine are really small. So the scene when Josh, the grad student who's doing his dissertation.
Yes.
When he goes into their library and starts photographing the book.
Right.
And then you see a shadow behind him.
Yes.
I believe the scene should have ended there. Instead, they show him getting hit on the head with a hammer and falling down and moaning and somebody coming in wearing his friend Mark's face. And to me, that I would have liked it better if he had just been another character that disappeared.
Now, that's interesting. You said wearing his friend Mark's face. So is that what you thought? It was a mask of sorts? Because, I don't know if you remember, there was the tapestry scene. And they showed, basically, if you paid attention to where they panned through, they showed every step of what was going to happen in the movie. And there was a scene where it looked like somebody was zombified.
Right.
And I took it that they zombified him to some degree.
I kind of did, too, until I read an article that said it was wearing his face.
And you know what? We'd talk about wanting to see a film a second time.
Yeah. So I don't really know. But my point is that I think that scene went a little too horror movie.
I'm not going to defend it, but I think I'm going to give you what I think's the rationale for it.
Yeah.
And of course, it was totally ridiculous, right? Because you knew he's going there and photographing, things aren't going to go well. And of course, for the justification factor, it made it a lot easier when they're making their decisions on, you know, who's going to survive and who's not, is that, oh, well, he betrayed the trust. You know, it's easy for him to go. The other kid peed on the ancestors. He's got to go.
Yeah.
But my thought is that he did this amazing thing where with the British travelers.
Yeah.
They disappear.
They disappear. Exactly.
And you know, right? But then you have one disappeared and you're pretty sure that's not good. But then when she disappears, and again, I don't know how this would play if you're just sitting in your living room watching this, but in the theater, you can hear the faintest screams of a girl.
Yes.
I loved it because you know, you're just like knowing. Now, you don't know what happened to her, but you hear and you just know that that was her. And it's a great thing. It's like a Spielberg thing or a Hitchcock thing. He gets a lot of mileage out of us not knowing. There's a dread and not knowing exactly what happened to these people. And I think that while you're arguing that if we didn't know what happened to that guy too, that could be interesting.
Yeah.
I think that I don't know, maybe it's to appease horror fans, is that, okay, he did that with the two British travelers. You didn't actually see the obnoxious guy get killed. He went off with the girl and we didn't see him again. So we've got to show at least one so that the audience knows, no, these people, like, that's the moment where you're like, okay, anything I might have thought, oh, these people really are gone. You see, I think that's why he did it. Okay. Just because you have, it's like you have to show the shark once. So I think that is the reason. It's the moment where the audience, in case you hadn't figured it out, oh, this is exactly what I thought was happening.
I guess that's maybe why I didn't like it, is because it's a moment that sort of removes some mystery. And I get what you're saying, but it just, it was only in retrospect that the scene threw me off, because it just seemed slightly out of place. Okay, so here's my other quibble, is I'm not sure, and I'm willing to be convinced on this, it's more of a question than anything, is what happens when they take her away in the carriage as the May Queen, and Christian goes into that other building and has sex with that woman? I'm not sure I totally bought, and I think I blame the actor a little bit for this, I'm not sure I totally bought him making that decision. And yes, I know he's on drugs and he's hallucinating, and but I felt like there was some aspect of his anger towards her that we hadn't seen in his performance enough in order to make that believable.
This is a time where I wish we had the female perspective.
Yeah.
I wish I could call my wife down here to talk to her about it, because she may have a different thought on that. Now, the actor is Jack Raynor, and you may know him from a movie, Sing Street. He's the brother.
Yes.
Rock and roll is a risk. So I've been going around pagan folk cults are a risk.
I mean, I don't know where lay the blame, really, but I felt
differently than you. Not much. It was weird, right? So it's a whole weird thing. Now, he's under different, I don't know, he's under some kind of potion. And this is, of course, you know, this is where a little suspension of disbelief. We don't know what kind of powders and herbs and things these people are taking, how it makes them feel.
I'm willing to go pretty far on allowing the movie to have some leeway with what those drugs are capable of.
Yeah. And so you know, it's something to make him virile and horny, I guess. But see, here's the thing. The two of them, right? The two of them are under the spell of the cult. He, I think, is sucked in. He comes in. That was the whole thing. That's when you know he is under the influence of the cult, is he wanted to do his dissertation there.
Yes, that's true. He's under the influence. Yeah.
He's in, and he doesn't want really much to do with her anymore. And of course, she knows it. And then there's that last scene. And I think that it's all by design that they wanted her to witness this final act of betrayal.
Oh, I think so too. Yeah.
Because that makes, you know, the decision, because again, they have a thing where I think that while they have the numbers that they have to get to at the end, they want the participants to feel like they have a choice. Right. And, again, I think it's earned. I think she could have choose. You know, you don't know what would have happened if she didn't choose. I guess he was so into the cult too, that he would have stayed.
Probably actually.
Yeah. I mean, these are interesting things. I mean, again, the guy makes some choices and it's a film. And when we get to that end and the smile, sure, I think you get those. I mean, it takes us to the beginning. The beginning, you said something about it's not doing that well. And it really aggravates me that a film like Annabelle Goes Home or whatever the frick that thing is called, that movie is doing better than this Midsommar. And in every way, shape, or form, this movie, I haven't seen the Annabelle thing, but this has got to be so superior to that crap.
No, this is a really good movie.
I will be shocked if that is not sitting somewhere in my top 10 at the end of the year.
Yeah, I would be too. And for some reason, this movie made me think of Mother.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even think about that, but you are right, sir.
Yeah.
You are right. It's a Mother all the way.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Look, she won't get nominated, but I'm telling you, this Florence Pugh, I'm a big fan. I saw her in this miniseries 6 months ago, whatever, The Little Drummer Girl.
Yes.
She is fantastic in this movie. What she has to do, holy crap.
You've got to see this movie she did, Lady Macbeth.
She's Lady Macbeth?
Well, It's based on the opera Lady Macbeth of Matensk.
I don't really know.
Okay. That. Anyhow, it's so yes, she's the lead character in this movie, and it's worth checking out. She's amazing in it.
Here's the thing, gang. There's no way we're going to get through both films that we're going to talk about. So I think what we're going to probably do is we're going to finish. We're going to talk a little bit more about Midsommar, and then we'll probably wrap up that. And then we'll probably keep going and start talking about our next film, which I feel is related. So when you hear that episode, you might hear some callbacks
because it's
to
all
Midsommar.
The same episode because we're recording it all at once. So here we are.
Yeah, don't give away the trade secrets. But yeah,
you can cut that out.
Yes. No, I'm just kidding. Uh-huh. I like to bring the audience in behind the mic. But while we're talking, here's a couple. There's some films, right?
Yeah.
That are related, and that if you're really a big Midsommar fan now, as we are, that you might want to check these films out. And I mentioned it, and I'm going to re-mention it. It's The Wicker Man. That's like the gold standard.
It is the gold standard.
Can you just make sure we're clarifying, right? We are not talking about the remake.
I've never seen the remake, and I never plan to.
I've seen portions of it. It is as bad as advertised.
Yeah.
But there's also much less known than The Wicker Man is from, like, I think 2011, The Wicker Tree.
Yes. The sequel.
Also by Robin Hardy.
Yes.
Yes. He only made three movies, and he wanted to make a sequel to The Wicker Man for like 30 years, and he finally got the money. It's a low budget, but you know what? It is cool, and it also has a lot in common with Midsommar and stuff. And what I like about those movies is it goes the route of that it needs the sort of silly ideals of uber Christians in order for them to succeed in their goals. So the idea of them being pure virgins works against them in The Wicker Man. That all they have to do is have sex with somebody and they're out.
And they're out.
But the fact that they want to stay pure is what makes them so appealing to the cult. I love that. Yeah, they get these Christian, like, country singers in the sequel. And they invite them to the festival because they figured that, the Christian country singers are going to be virgins.
Right.
And this time they have a male and a female. It's so awesome. You've not seen it, right?
No.
Oh, yeah. You got to check that out.
Wicker Man, Wicker Tree. What else?
Yeah. All right. Now I'm going to give you The Invitation, as we just mentioned, by Karen Kasama.
Which is about people getting sucked into a cult at a dinner party.
Not exactly. But it is really ridiculous. You know what it is? This is what's unfortunate. Midsommar builds up this whole idea of getting involved in a cult. And The Invitation looked like they designed a whole dinner party movie just so they could have some sensational reveal and have a wild last 15 minutes.
Well, I haven't seen it, so can you tell me the ending so I don't have to?
No. I think now you should see it.
Okay.
That's why I don't want to tell you too much, because I think that you, again, it's really hard. I feel bad is that this movie came out in, 2015. There was no Midsommar there. And you know, it was a very low budget movie. I think that they really scraped together all the funds to do this thing. There's really no big stars in the film.
Right.
And I think that also hurts it, because a lot of these actors, you're like, I don't even know who they are. And one guy looks like Tom Hardy so much that it's confusing. And it's funny, if you read reviews about it, people are always like saying the actor's name. They're like, oh, Tom Hardy. No, wait a minute. Because the guy looks so much like Tom Hardy. But, you know, it kind of did some of the things that Midsommar does, but it did it earlier. But of course, now no one's ever going to talk about that film. They're just going to talk about Midsommar because Midsommar is so
because it's so good. It's just going to knock all these other films out of the genre.
And then, you know, if you want to go your full, like, movie where a guy's, like, you know, innocently sucked into a cult and handled and stuff, there's two movies from 1982 that as a kid I loved and was also so frightened of, because it just was scarier than any horror movie, was this movie called Split Image.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember? Is it like he gets sucked into the cult,
yes,
and then the family can't get him out, so they hire a deprogrammer played by James Woods?
Yes.
and he basically, they have to kidnap their son, and he's like stuck for like 72 hours in his room where James Woods is like screaming at him and spitting on the picture of the cult leader who was played by Peter Fonda. Oh, it's so awesome. And then at the same movie, the same year was a movie called Ticket to Heaven, which is also the same exact story about getting sucked into a cult and the parents have to get a deprogrammer.
Which I guess there's also that one with Harvey Keitel and...
Hideous Kinky?
Yes.
Is that the one?
No, it's Up in...
Up in Smoke.
Up in Smoke?
Right? No.
Something like...
What's the one that... Jane Campion directed it, right?
Yes.
And it's got... Kate Winslet in it.
Yeah.
Oh, damn it. See, why didn't you have that on a list?
Because it just popped into my mind right now. I hadn't been thinking about cult deprogramming. I had been thinking about people...
You hadn't?
No, not watching.
you made me watch a movie for this program. So how could you not be thinking about this?
Well, I've been thinking about it, but I was thinking about cults, not necessarily the deprogramming part.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just offering other things. Like, there's Mandy.
Holy
has a great
Smoke
cult
is the name of the
it.
Movie. It was Holy Smoke.
Yes, I didn't see it, but I know what you're talking about.
I did see it in the theater 20 years ago. So I think I'm.
Was it? Is it worth it? Jane Campion.
Look, I guess if you're doing the subgenre, yeah, it's worth it. It's probably, you know, one of the better entries in the subgenre.
Well, that's why I said you have to see The Invitation, right?
Yes.
I didn't really like it, but it's part of the subgenre.
As a subgenre completionist, I got to see it, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not a subgenre completionist, but you insisted.
I insisted you complete the subgenre.
You insisted I see a movie, and it's one of my least favorite directors.
Yes, you
this
hate
guy,
this
Ben
guy.
Wheatley. We talked about him in the program, and I hated what I had seen of his films, which was not very much, but
right.
I hated this movie called Free Fire.
Yes.
And so, you know, I'm not going to go spending money to go rent a film from this guy, but anything that's available for free, and there was a film that was for free called Sightseekers. Sightseers, yes.
Yeah.
And it was on Criterion, so... I said, well, I'll watch that, right? I can't watch this other movie that you wanted me to watch, Kill List, so I'm going to go watch the Sightseers. And I hated it. I thought it was terrible.
I will not be defending Sightseers in any way. I didn't.
And here's a weird thing, right? here's a common thing that was in Sightseers, and it was also in Midsommar. And I've been seeing this more and more. And what's funny is that the first time I saw something like this, like a few movies ago, I thought, man, I have not seen anything like this. It's very graphic. And now I'm seeing it all the time. And I'm talking about skull crushing.
Skull crushing is about, it's happening all the time.
I'm talking about not just like hitting someone on the head and there's a big, bad, bloody bruise. I'm talking about caving that mother effing skull in, and it's everywhere, man. I had to watch those Zoller movies, right? The Cell Block 99 and the Bone Tomahawk.
And those have
and
head like, crushing. Man.
Yeah, and then we have like Mandy, right? And there's a big crushing moment in that movie. And then the Sightseers movie has a head crushing. And then... This, you know, the Midsommar, man, you want to see some head crushing.
That's some serious head crushing.
When you see a 72-year-old man jump off a cliff, right? Well, his legs get crushed, but it's the woman. Well, no, because then he doesn't get
right,
killed.
No, they have to take a hammer over and crush his head.
Right, and they're going to crush his head.
Yeah.
And the other one, luckily, she crushed her head on a rock.
Yeah,
so,
she looked down. And he makes sure that we get a really good look at the crushed heads more than once.
Man. I don't know when. I didn't know in my life. I said this to my wife the other day after seeing Kill List, which guess what?
It
has some skull crushing.
It has that scene with the hammer, yeah.
And I said I went to like almost 50 years with no skull crushing, and suddenly in 6 months, I'm seeing nonstop skull crushing.
I think somebody's got to do a skull crushing supercut because we've discovered something here.
So listen, the skull crushing. So, you know, here's the funny thing, right? So... I don't have all the time in the world, but you were very insistent that I need to see this Kill List.
Yes.
And after I said, well, I saw the Sightseers movie, and I just don't really want to see another Ben Wheatley movie. I just, the way they're shot, they look like they're shot for the BBC, and it's like, it looks like somebody's video camera from like, you know,
well, yeah,
two
they're
years
made,
ago.
They're made on like $20.
Yeah. And I don't, and I just don't, I mean, just, he has no filmmaking style, in my opinion. And it's just like, I don't even know why they keep giving this guy money to make movies.
Because it's not very much money.
But you basically were like, no, you have to see Kill List. And I said, well, it's not available for free. I'm not, I'll pay you. I will pay you to see this movie. I'm like, you don't have to pay me. But I'm like, so I had to say to my wife, listen, tomorrow night,
you've got to watch this.
We have to watch Kill. I'm like, but you know, he says it's somewhat tied into Midsommar, and you love that, so maybe we can watch this film, right? So, and I said, thankfully, it's only an hour and a half,
yeah,
right?
It's short.
It's not that. So, yeah, thankfully, it's short. So first of all, I want to know, why is it you felt so compelled that I had to watch this movie? You got to explain it to me.
Okay,
first.
Because, and I did tell you when you had to see it. I said, I think you're probably going to hate it. But I think it's...
Is that what you did? But you basically said, oh, here's a director that we know that Jim hates.
Well,
and you're saying that you thought this was his most tolerable movie, and yet I think you're going to hate it, but you should watch it anyway.
I do think it's his best movie.
But I don't understand why you thought I had to watch it.
Oh, just because it has such a similar plot to Wicker Man and Midsommar.
It does not, though. It doesn't. It does not.
What do you mean?
It does not. Just because he decides to throw in some cult people at the end, that doesn't make it a Wicker Man. Listen, this movie is about one thing, but he didn't have enough for a whole hour and a half film. So they threw in a couple of little tidbits, and then there's this cult thing at the end. And then there's a very non-surprising thing with his wife and his son.
Yeah.
Which unless you're a total moron, you can see it coming. And here's the worst part is that because you don't give a rat's ass about anybody or anything in this movie, you're just like, you could care less, like it happens, right? The ending, which is supposed to be so shocking. It's like, yeah, I saw it coming and who cares? And you can't, first of all, you can't understand a word they're saying in the whole movie.
Yeah, that doesn't, you know, that doesn't bother me. That's one of the,
it doesn't, you know why it didn't bother us? Because it was so bad I didn't care to what they were saying. Now
it's his style.
It's more of a film about the hitman. That part's kind of interesting, going on the job and stuff, even though there's a movie about kind of hitman, was much better, was called The Hit, Stephen Frears, and you should check that out. But that part was kind of interesting.
But they're being manipulated by this death cult.
Yeah, but for what, though? Like, it didn't really add up to anything. Why, like, it really didn't to why, though. Like, it just, it was more of a question that it just didn't even understand the logic. Because it kind of said, well, okay, like, maybe the priest was killed, maybe he was a child molester. Then, obviously, the second guy was, like, a kiddie porn person, so
right, but that made sense. But they're part of a cult that is, like, instead of committing suicide, they have these guys kill them.
Oh, that's why they're saying thank you, I
yes.
guess. I guess, but who's the person that they were supposed to be killing the third one, or is it just a setup so they could kill them?
It's just a setup so they can kill them. That's it.
Yeah, it's so weak.
These guys, they're the outsiders being pulled in by this cult, and
this is so weak.
And they're being manipulated by the cult. To me, that seems like the same story.
Oh, it's a terrible movie. It's like such a thin idea, and it's lame.
I recommend it to Bill from Queens.
Nobody. Oh, wait. I think, he said he saw some movie from Ben Wheatley, and it might have been that one, and he said it was horrible.
Okay. Well, I
just didn't pay attention. As soon as he said Ben Wheatley, I said,
I
saw this movie. I sat through it, and even my wife didn't like it, and she liked the Sightseers movie, sort of.
Oh, really? She liked Sightseers?
She's like, I think Sightseers was better than this one. She just didn't like this because it went nowhere. And it was like, And it was like, it was bad, dude.
I can argue for why I like it, but I won't do it right now.
You actually liked it.
Oh, yeah. I like Kill List. Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Come on, man. It's the worst movie. It wasn't. No, you know what? It wasn't because it was better than Spider-Man Art from Home.
No, I actually like Kill List. And I
wish Spider-Man had gotten put into the Kill List cult.
No,
I would have said thank you.
The reason I liked Kill List is because I thought I didn't really mind it about not understanding the dialogue. I thought it was sort of, this sort of mumbling, realistic tale. You're not really supposed to. I mean, who cares about the dialogue, right? That's what I liked about the movie.
I think I'd care about the $10.50 I would have spent to see in the theater.
Well, it's a cult film, okay? And not just that
it's a film about a cult, sort of, but it's not a cult movie.
It is, though.
Meaning it's not a, like, it's not a movie I'm going to go see at midnight.
Well, but people do.
They do?
Yes.
Who are these people that like it?
Kill List has a Kill List has a cult following.
I don't. Well, maybe you.
Bloody Bloody Disgusting magazine called it the best horror film of the year.
It's not a horror movie. It was a horrible movie. It wasn't horror. To me, did not feel like a horror movie.
I will agree to disagree with you on this, but I like Kill List.
Ooh, thumbs way down.
Thumbs up from me.
I shouldn't say that. I do have to say that the middle portion of the movie was interesting.
I found the movie, here's why I liked it. I found it emotionally effective. When I was sitting alone watching it in a dark room, basically just the mise-en-scene and the pacing.
The guy shoots widescreen, but he has no concept of where to put the actors. What?
The movie got under my skin. Now, mise-en-scene was probably the wrong thing to say, but
Yes, it was.
The movie took me on sort of a 90-minute little emotional experience that I thought was cool.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, it's our first major disagreement, folks. It had to happen eventually.
Well, no, here it's good that it's happened, because now I guess it gives our listeners something to take sides on.
I think that this is what it was. I have my own sort of conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
That I felt that you purposely, right, did this, that you knew I was going to hate this movie because you just want to see me riled up. So that's why at the beginning of the movie, you threw out the Spider-Man. And at the end, it's just like one of these movies, right, where you were handling me the whole time. So at the end, you just, the boom. And I knew, though, what you were doing the whole time. I'm like, he knows what he's doing. Okay, so listen, folks, there's no way we're going to get to talk about the next film, and I don't want to cut that short. So we are going to wrap this up. And so just as a cliffhanger for you folks out there is we're going to talk about another movie called Under the Silver Lake. And it's also by the same distribution company, A24, that did Midsommar. And I thought it would be a good double feature because it talks about weird conspiracies and maybe some cults in there. And maybe there's even a skull crush or two that we could also throw in there. And so I thought in a strange way, there was some similarities, and I happened to see them like around the same time as Under Silver Lake. Didn't quite make it into theaters. It made it to a video on demand, and it was on Amazon Prime, which you could catch up. So if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, geez, what's this Under the Silver Lake? Why don't you go ahead and listen, go watch that. And then
come back and listen to our next episode. Yeah.
Yeah, which we are not going to be taping right now because we run out of time to like even tape. And so, you know, but I think it was worthwhile because it really, Midsommar is a gold standard movie in my book. It's not for everyone. I would say that, right?
Oh, I'm really not recommending it to much of anyone.
See, and I think if you say you're a horror fan, well, this is going to test what kind of horror fan you really are.
Yeah, no, this is a horror film the way like Rosemary's Baby is a horror film.
Yeah. Now, do you think your wife would like this? See, I think she would.
I think she would. Yes, I do. I don't think my parents would like it.
I'm not recommending it for most parents, no.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
And as I've read, if you're in a shaky relationship, maybe not go with your significant other to see it.
I think it's not the best date movie. It's
well, I heard there was like some fights that broke out after one screening where a couple got into a huge fight and they broke up like basically at the end of the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, depending on who you side with in this movie, I can see that. I can see that happening.
I'm glad though that you feel the same way I do about the whole murder suicide thing.
Yes, I do. Yep, I had that thought.
Which, by the way, again, it's not mentioned. It's literally not. It's not explicitly laid out that way, but it just seems very suspicious.
It seems very
some of the
suspicious.
Choices he made.
Yeah.
In just the way that they showed the murder-suicide and that having the computer left on.
Yes.
And it be not like a phone, but like a laptop computer, and it was like almost like left as evidence.
Yes.
Those are the things that were, they were just little clues for me that made me feel like.
And he would have known all these details about her because their friend group talked like that about her.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't the first time. He wasn't meeting her for the first time after this happened. Yeah, he met her. So, all right. But get out there, see Midsommar. Or I guess if you've listened to this, hopefully you've seen it, because otherwise we've just pretty much ruined the movie for you. We've just ruined it for you. But get out there, see it, and then we will be back to talk about Under the Silver Lake next time. All right, okay. Kids. And don't forget Apple Podcasts. You know, we have a website. Not everybody has a website. We do. StuffWeSeen.com. And Twitter and Instagram and all that fun stuff. So get there. All right, people.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.